Welcome to the Frankly Slots podcast. I'm Frank Legato, editor-in-chief of Global Gaming Business Magazine. Today, our guest is Buddy Frank. Buddy is one of the most sought-after consultants on slot operations in the industry. He is principal and CEO of BF Slot Strategies, a consultancy he formed after a distinguished 35-year career in slot operations. He started in Northern Nevada and eventually went to California, where he retired after nearly 9 years as vice president of slot operations at Pechanga Resort Casino. Buddy was inducted into the EKG Slot Awards Hall of Fame in 2023. Welcome, Buddy. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to have the two Franks together again.
Indeed, indeed. You began your professional career as a journalist, right? How did you transition from reporting to slot management?
Well, I did TV news for about 10 years, had some hair then, Frank, so yeah, it was possible to be that way. But journalism is a great career. I love it, but I was going broke, quite frankly. So I kind of hung up my shingles as doing PR work, and a group here in Reno called Fitzgerald's, which later became Lincoln Management and spread across the country, they hired me to do some freelance writing on the subject of luck. And so I wrote Fairly stories. They liked what I was doing. They hired me to be their marketing manager. And after about 5 years of doing that, one of the principals, Terry Oliver, came to me and said, "Hey, you're going to be our new slot director." And I told him I knew nothing about slots, but I was pretty good with technology and marketing. And he said, "You can learn." And so that's how it started. And I think it was a great advantage because at the time, I had had some almost 3 years of electrical engineering in college. And at the time, our industry was changing from a world of all mechanical slots to what we have today, which is all network electronic digital devices. So kind of right time, right place. I brought some marketing skills and some technology skills to the slot world pretty much at the exact perfect time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you retired several years ago. What do you feel is the largest change on slot floors since you retired from your job at Pechanga?
Yeah, I've been out of daily operations for about 10 years, and there's been a couple of changes in the industry, AI, which we'll talk about later. But one of the biggest ones, I think, was the change in what I'll call lease or premium games. When I left, it was rare for anyone to have 8% of their floor being lease games. And pretty much every CEO and the CFO in the country, along with all slot directors, pretty much hated participation machines. Mm-hmm. The only reason we kept Wheel of Fortune is all the customers wanted it.
Right.
That has changed dramatically now, though. As you know, in fact, I think when you look at some of the surveys, the average now across the country is 15%. So a big change. And the only reason that happened is because the machines are just really good. The customers love them. All new concepts. So that's one of the biggest changes I've seen is this, you know, it kind of dovetailed in with the penny machines and the increases in volatility. But these games are just great. Customers love them, and the participation percentages have really changed. And when you do the math economically, it kind of makes sense. Even though we used to hate it, now it kind of makes sense.
I'd like to touch on something you wrote about just recently. Do you feel there's been a general tightening of slot floors, lowering the overall RTP? What do you feel has led to that, and what needs to happen to reverse this trend?
In a word, greed is the main one. You know, there was some natural tightening of it when we went early in my career, the dollar slot machine was king. Mm-hmm. And they had pretty much across the industry, the percentages were 3, 4, maybe 5 in the dollars. And as you got lower denomination down to the nickels and quarters, you know, that advanced to maybe 6 or 7. But then that Australian craze of pennies came along and everybody went, "Oh, pennies, you know, in that same model, they should be a little bit tighter." So pennies started popping up 7, 8, or 9. And subtly along the way, somehow penny machines became an average bet of $15 or $88 or whatever, but the odds still stayed tight. And of course, corporate CFOs love that, more money in the bank. And then a couple of surveys came out, good work actually, by Anthony Lucas, sort of my nemesis on this issue only. I really respect him as a researcher. But he did a study that says, hey, you can tighten your slots and it's imperceptible to the player. Well, I'll agree with that, that you or I or any individual playing the slot can't detect the change over time. But when something decreases your time on device and costs you more money, it's going to add up someday, sometime. And I think it's been negative for our industry. And in a recent story I wrote, I just showed the difference between Reno, Nevada, which didn't, this is from a report from Nevada Gaming Control Board, Reno, which didn't tighten their slots as much, had a bigger gain. Little Reno gained more in slot revenue than all of the Strip in that same period of time, and they tightened their slots. And I think that just shows what can happen. I lost you on my end there, Frank. Oh, there you go.
Over time, you notice you're not playing as long, you're not winning as often. I mean, you know, that's really the long-term effect of lower RTP.
Well, let's turn that back on you. I play slots a little. I think you play a lot more than I do. And you notice that you don't get as much time on device. Now, we've replaced that thing with some more volatility. Those bonus rounds, I think, have really changed our industry. And people like them, even though they may be losing more. I've always noticed a trend that when you ask any slot player, how you doing? Oh, you know, I had a great day today. And if you got out the wallet, you find out it was empty. And you went, well, how come you feel that? Well, I had this big bonus hit. They don't mention that they put it all back in.
Right.
But those bonuses really make players enjoy it. But in a way, that almost makes the return to player worse, because there's bonuses to pay for those bonuses. Other players have even shorter time on device. So it's kind of a change, but not all players are hating it. Some people enjoy it because of that volatility.
Well, you know, on that, practically every new video slot these days that comes out has a pot collection feature and or a hold and spin bonus event. Do you feel this is just kind of a stagnation of new ideas from the slot managers or slot manufacturers, I should say? And do you foresee a day when players will tire of all the sameness on the slot floor?
I think it's just a natural change, you know. Thank you, Scott Ollie, by the way, for both of those. I mean, he's a brilliant designer in Australia, and I remember when he first did those, and it was a major change, because before that, we'd had buy-a-pay and these kinds of things that were hot, and he invented that, and now everybody seems to have triple pots, which is a lot newer than hold and spin. And I think you'll probably see another trend. We can't keep the same all the time. In fact, our demographics are changing. I never thought it would happen, but we've actually seen a bit younger demographic more. Right. And when you grow up on Super Mario and Call of Duty and stuff, maybe the classic three-reel spinning slot's a little boring for you. So we have to change and evolve. And I think our industry's done that really well as the demographics have changed, and it'll probably change again. Like I say, hold and spin, triple pots are hot now. Let's give it a year or two, Frank. You've seen the changes just like I have.
Right. Now, I don't worry a lot about theoretical percentages because I usually play video poker. What is the status of video poker these days? I mean, we've seen a lot of casinos, you know, remove higher paying machines. Some of them remove them all. What's the future hold here? And you know, why is it more valuable for especially a locals casino to keep those pay tables at the higher end?
You remember that word I mentioned earlier, greed?
Greed.
I think that's the problem with the video poker. Video poker is a great game. I know the reason you like it. Well, here's a shocker for everybody. Everybody says, well, what's the loosest thing you can play in a casino? It's got to be craps or blackjack. And I go, no, it's a good video poker machine. Here in Reno at the Atlantis, there's a Jacks Are Better that's 6'9", and you know that's 99.54 payback. And then it's got a progressive on top of that. So it's probably 99.7. You know, so you're only gaining 0.3%. And any CFO is going, well, do I want to hold a half? Well, back up. The average player probably plays at a couple points more. Right. So let's just say the industry average on your video poker is 3, maybe 4%. Compared to the slots that are 6, 7, or 8, or 9, it's still a good bargain. But the CFO's looking at it and says, well, why don't I put in more buffaloes? Because they're going to hold 7 or 8%. The problem is the video poker player, and I'm looking at one right now, doesn't want to play that other game. He wants to play video poker because he enjoys it. There's a small skill element in there. Great time on device. For many players, not you, Frank, but for many players, if you don't have video poker, they'll go play someplace else or not play at all or go online. And so I tell people, well, I said, go ahead and get rid of all your video poker if you're 100% occupied all the time. And there's not a casino on earth that's in that condition, even on New Year's Eve. You've always got capacity. So I say to them, what part of that money you're getting from Frank Legato don't you like? Because he may not be there. Well, certainly the video poker player does. But the big thing is people were worried they had bad marketing schemes where those low return, high return to player kinds of games like video poker, they were giving away a bit too much in marketing. And that bothered them because sometimes they went negative. Well, that was just stupid. You've got to have your rewards match what you're getting from the player. But there's some other unique things about those video poker players. They're consistent. They're probably the most loyal. And a lot of people worried about those pro players coming in, really taking advantage. You know the funny thing, Frank? Most of those video poker, including my good friend Bob Dancer, aren't playing video poker as much because they can find out it's better to be an advantage player, taking advantage of errors and persistence machines. Because a good video poker player is only going to gain 1 or 2% on their payback. Whereas if you find a good persistence machine, they can probably make 10 or 15% on their money. So I don't think we need to worry as much about advantage players anymore. Let's just give good video poker to people who are high repeat visitors and love playing video poker and will come through thick and thin and get good time on device. I'm going to get all your money anyway. Frank, you know that. I get it all the time. So it just takes longer and you have a better time.
There used to be an opinion out there that the massive numbers of people who thought they know video poker strategy would make up for those few advantage players as far as revenues go. Do you agree with that?
Not really, because even a bad video poker player is still going to be playing at about 4 or 5%. So you know, you're still going to have an advantage on the other one, but that is a small thing. Now, in terms of blackjack, I think that really applies. I've been a lot of casinos where they go freaky over card counters. Oh my God, they're horrible. Do you know how hard it is to be a good card counter?
Right.
In fact, I have many of those really good card counters are good friends of mine, and they're sharp as a tack and really good. But they'll be the first to tell you that there's not that many good card counters or hold card peakers or whatever out there. So you got to be careful that you don't throw everybody out, you know, trying to get at these few. Because a good name for a lot of those people we used to evict is actually VIP players, because they're great while they try to learn to be card players, card counters.
One more GameStop question. What do you think is going to happen with the mechanical stepper slots? You know, that they were dominant when you and I first started doing this. Will they ever, you know, achieve some modicum of that dominance back?
Well, Bally and IGT were the dominant ones. You remember that was the only one that worked, and it worked really good. It particularly worked well in high limit. And it kind of faded out. They kind of changed their design. Some new cabinets, I think, were big mistakes, and they went away. And we went to a real dormancy period in mechanical reels. But then Every came along. Actually, a guy I know, Mick Romer, Kaina, who did some of the original Bally work with Every, then called Multimedia, introduced a game that looked a lot like that old Bally game, and it was a smash success, and it really did well, first in Class 2 and then on regular ones. And what was great about that, it started a comeback. And then finally, Light and Wonder, you know, the former Bally woke up and introduced the Landmark 7000s, doing great. IGT may have fixed their, well, AGS hired one of the original multimedia designers, and he designed a pretty darn good game out there, Real Spinner. And now IGT has kind of fixed theirs with a Diamond RS. So I think there's a smaller crowd, but it's a good one in recovering in mechanical real slots. And again, pretty much the higher limit player enjoys the mechanical real slot. I think he trusts it a little bit more. And certainly new players to our industry probably can ease into a mechanical reel slot a little quicker than they video. So I don't think it'll ever catch up to video, but it's still going to be a nice niche segment.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Every's part of IGT now. So
So they're going to get the best of the best and combine. You know, the one that surprised me is Powerful Aristocrat. When they introduced the Realm, I went, oh my God, they'll bring over their great gameplay strategies to real slots. And sorry, my friends at Aristocrat, that Realm never worked. I mean, it just kind of, so it has to do with the cabinet, the theme, the game, all those mysterious things that have to combine to have a successful slot.
Okay. One more thing. What about rewards? The rewards. Were you a free play guy? I mean, now there's a lot of gifting programs out there in the slot clubs. Where do you see that going?
Well, I think gifting actually came before free play. In fact, if I had to say, hey, you want a couple strategies that'll work no matter what? One, slot tournaments. They always work. Two, gift of the month. People just go crazy for that. I don't know why they think they're getting something free. I remember high limit players battling each other to get a cheap imitation watch that they didn't even need because it was gift of the month day. So that's gifting is still really big, but free play is the controversial issue. I think free play is wonderful if you do good analytics. And right. What happened with free play? Like many things, a little bit is great, too much is a problem. And people weren't careful. They started giving away too much free play. And they thought, hey, it's free. It's not really fun. But yeah, there's a cost to it. And so I think they got lazy in their analytics and looking. I think free play is wonderful if you give it to the right players. And with today's analytics, you can tell. In the old days, they give it away and assume they got more visits. But now you can look and I can see, did you actually come in more than out? I can do before and after surveys to see what impacts it had, who responded with money out of their pocket when they got free play versus not with money out of their pocket. So done correctly, analyzed correctly, I think free play is a terrific tool. If you don't do that homework, it's a terrible abuse.
Mm-hmm. And you know, how it's reported on your financials differs according to regulations. A place like Pennsylvania, it doesn't go on their as income.
Yeah,
it's a promotional expense.
Yeah, a lot of people do that, and that can make a difference depending on your jurisdictions. But it's a lot like premium play. You know, do you make it a contra expense, a contra revenue, or an expense? So those kinds of bookkeeping things just get in the way. And I don't think we should consider that as much as we should just look at the productivity overall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, time for your crystal ball here. What do you feel are the most important actions that will assure a healthy slot sector in the future? And you know, what kind of new technologies are we going to see?
Well, one is I was really encouraged. I used to laugh and tell everybody, I'd say, you remember Vegas in the old days, I'd do surveys and the average age was 50, slightly more women than men. And then Vegas went through this period of they built amusement parks and roller coasters and everything else and family friendly and brought in the kids. And the average age stayed to 50 plus. And then they realized that was a huge mistake. So they went to the sexy Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and sex and romance and cocktails and everything. And the average age still stayed exactly at 50. And I was shocked. But something happened in COVID. Boom. I think it forced young people to discover that, hey, casinos are fun and there's human beings there instead of just AI bots. Uh-huh. And so for the first time ever, average age is drifting down to 45 or so. So I think we have to be conscious of that and make sure we don't portray ourselves in the old models and take a look at them. And some people have done that wonderfully. You look at Circa, and I think they must have a sign out front that makes it illegal for old guys like you and me to even come in there. Because that's a young, vibrant crowd. Go there during a football game and you'll see it's a young, dynamic crowd. And sports betting has made a big thing. But the big change I see coming in the industry really has to do with better use of analytics. Uh-huh. And I'm a big fan. I know AI gets a lot of negative press. I think it's a wonderful thing. If you understand it, you understand its strengths, and be careful and avoid its weaknesses and its downfalls. You know, I've been talking to my friends who teach at the university. And I teach a little bit up there on gaming. But they're just going crazy because they say essentially 100% of their students are cheating. They can't write anymore. They cheat on tests. They used to all do open book, take it home, write an essay. They don't do it anymore because they know everyone. It was written by Claude or Perplexity or ChatGPT. So they're really they can't even do some of the standard tests. So they're having to go back to blue books. Remember those that cramped your hand? Mm-hmm. And so in certain areas, AI is really destructive. But I think in slots, it's wonderful. And I can give you 1,000 examples, but I mentioned free play, doing the analytics. We've always had all the data. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. But who wanted to spend 2 months to learn one little fact when now you can press a button and get it instantly? I can take a look at your play and see what does he play? When does he play it? What offers do you respond to? What is your demographic mix compared to everybody else? Am I sending you out the offers at the right time, date, and thing that you respond to? We always had all that data. But who would do it? Now we can get that stuff instantly. There's indexes out there I never would have thought about. One I like from QCI is called the Devotion Score. What does that mean? Well, what product does Frank Legato appeal to? Maybe no one else appeals that, but you may appeal to that thing and have a high devotion and come back right to that machine. Well, if I'm going to get rid of that machine or add more, I want to talk to Frank Legato. So that kind of marketing, individualized, is possible now, and we couldn't do that before. And I think that will benefit existing older players, give them the right offers they want, but it'll also be real useful in attracting new and younger demographics.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much for being on the podcast today, buddy. And good luck with your video poker.
You and me both. I love it. By the way, that's the one thing both of us have is we love this industry. We love slot machines. And I think we like the entire gaming space overall. So glad to have you with me. And congratulations on all your honors, too. You mentioned my little Hall of Fame, but you're in the writers group, which is pretty special, too. So nice well, talking with you, Frank.
Thank you. And thank you for being on the slot podcast today. All right. That's it. There's a video. And I guess I'll see you soon.
Well, if not real soon, certainly at G2E.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to go and do my annual trip to all the slot manufacturers.
Oh, okay.
I have them all scheduled in Vegas.
They're all pretty much based in Las Vegas now, aren't they?
I think I have 10 in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I got them all in a week, going to each of their offices. Going to Chicago in mid August.
Who's left in Chicago, Frank?
Incredible Technologies.
Oh, okay.
And Novomatic Americas.
Okay.
So I'll be doing that, going to a Cubs game, I believe.
Oh, good for you.
It's on tap.
I'm thinking about making Chicago too. I want to do a train trip on overnight, so I may try to hit Chicago as well.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
You take care. Bye-bye, Frank.
Bye-bye.